Hello, Lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning into the Lifebook Member Podcast today. I'm your host, Jordan River, for Spiritual Month 2020. Powerful, ever-powerful Spiritual Month. And we have a wonderful guest today. He is a speaker and an author and so much more, and he's here to talk to us about the spiritual category and deepening your spirituality. Jeffrey Allen is on the line with us. How are you doing today, Jeffrey?
Hey, Jordan, I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Really excited. I love sharing with anybody who's interested in personal growth, spirituality. You know, it's just super fun to connect with that community.
Oh, love it. Well, you're going to love the Lifebook members. We dive deep into one category each month, and this month is Spiritual Month. What a powerful category it is. Truly a transcendent part of everyone's life, I would say. But before we dive into all of that, could you please give a brief background on yourself, your work, and your journey into spirituality?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, sure. So originally, my background is actually in mathematics and engineering. So I'm a software engineer by trade.
Oh, wow.
And so the way that I approach the world, even my spirituality, still has this really kind of engineering feeling to it. Right? So right. Even when I was in school as a training to be a software engineer, I was having experiences that what people would call spiritual experiences or intuitive experiences. And it was really fun for me. That scientific mindset is what let me say, oh, these experiences don't quite match with how I thought the world worked, but they're still experiences I'm having. So I'm going to rearrange my internal world to fit the experiences I'm having externally. And the opposite too. I rearrange my outer world to match what I'm feeling internally. So really fun. So I kind of had this dual life for many years where I had a 15-year career as a software engineer in startup companies, corporate America. I worked for the Department of Energy, for the government, so many different things. But the whole time I had this really exciting spiritual life that was unfolding where I found that you can actually go to school and learn how to see energy and do energy healing. And so I just took, all these classes I could take just to get all these variety of experiences. What does it mean to be spiritual? What does it mean to be on the planet in a body, other than the material stuff? We get that pretty easily. but it's, you have to, maybe make a little room and kind of open your mind to discover who we really are. It's really
look a little
underneath.
Deeper. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's fun. It's just that way of living is super, super fun.
Well, I think, we all, sorry to butt in immediately, but I think that we all know that on some level, all of the sayings, you can't take the money with you when you die. No one's on their deathbed wishing that they had worked more, or earned more. But you're yeah. right. When you get to live in that space every day, that's really, I think we could all apply that a little more to our life, even though we know it intellectually. I think we could act it out and hold it in our hearts a little bit better.
Definitely. And the nice thing is that it fits with any other thing that you're doing. So like I said, I was a software engineer. And although, some of my colleagues thought maybe I'd gone off the deep end, sure. It's okay. I could still apply energy work to those situations. Like I would be in meetings, I'd be doing energy work. I would use the way that I know how to communicate with people energetically. I would use that all the time for business and relationships. And so for me, there's never a separation. Even though my beliefs were different than sort of, kind of a more traditional, more rigid belief system, for me, everything's integrated. There's no like separate spirituality. Mm-hmm. And so it's fun. So I did that for 15 years, but it's been a long time ago. So in 2005, I made a big change. I stopped that career and went full-time into energy work and energy healing. And eventually that led into teaching like I'm doing now. And so I spent 10 years as an energy reader and an energy healer, just listening to people's real life situations, what's actually happening in their world right now, what are the problems they're facing, the things that they want to create, and then what can I see in the energy there, and how can we adapt that? How can they change energetically or learn or grow, to create a happier life or a more fulfilling life?
Absolutely.
And so 10 years of real world, listening to people, what was happening, it really brought me so many interesting insights. Sometimes I would think, wow, they're teaching me.
Sure, absolutely.
People are calling me for insights, but I'm looking at their life. I'm like, wow, these are really good. I can apply these insights to myself.
Oh, man. I'm definitely speaking that language. I love it.
Yeah. And then the last 5 years, especially, has primarily just been teaching. So I'm not in private practice anymore. I'm just looking for, so how do I sort through all this beautiful, you know, mass amounts of information, especially about spirituality, and kind of sort through and find the stuff that's like helpful, nonsense, right?
So, applicable stuff. The effective stuff.
Yeah, because I'm really into practical spirituality.
I like that.
And I'm very flexible. I don't, I'm okay if I'm wrong. In fact, that's great. That just means I'm learning. So that means I can adapt really quickly, which in times like this is actually very helpful.
Oh my gosh. I have a lot to speak on when it comes to the time we're facing. I wanted to ask you this first, though. You talked about, I like how you said overall happiness and then you reframed it to satisfaction. And that's a lot of, that's a whole discussion in itself.
Yeah.
But what have you discovered about this link between a healthy, deepened spirituality and an overall fulfilling life? Because I feel that it's one of the few categories where if you really, really get it dialed in, it's one of those kind of Trump categories. I put it with emotional, where if you get your emotional life right and you are experiencing a positive state of emotions on a regular basis because of how you've built your life, that's kind of all there is, man. Like you it's a Trump card. Spirituality, I kind of feel the same way if people get it dialed in. But you tell me, what do you think about fulfilling spirituality and a fulfilling life?
Yeah, well, I would definitely agree with you. I think that I like what you said, healthy spirituality, right? So, and I could talk about what I think of that is, but if you have a healthy spirituality, that may be the only thing that's really required to having a satisfying life.
That's exactly what
I'm
saying.
So the other things are super helpful. Like it's great if you've got your finances sorted out and your body's healthy and you're emotionally stable and, you know, things like this are really helpful. But even if you don't have any of those, but you've got healthy spirituality, your life is pretty good.
You're at peace, you know, at least with God or whoever you're, you know?
Yeah. And for me, that healthy spirituality, just because of my life experience has been, means that it's an experience-based spirituality. So I'm always learning from the world around me. So I have experiences and then many times, especially early on, those experiences did not match with my beliefs, whether they were like kind of scientific beliefs or spiritual beliefs. And so at that point, you kind of have a choice of saying, well, something doesn't match. Either, you know, one of these is insane. Either my beliefs are insane or my experiences are insane. And I always chose the beliefs. I always said, well, probably I just don't understand the world fully.
Interesting.
And so I'm going to go with my experiences. And that's probably a little bit different. So for me, that leads to being, I'm just curious and about the world, and it's very connecting if you're open to, you know, what's happening and like, oh, maybe I didn't understand. That's why I was confused.
Oh, I love that attitude.
And so I'm always growing and I'm always learning. And to me, this is very different from a more traditional, even a religious spirituality, which is instead of experience-based, it tends to be rules-based. And that's, I think for a long time, that was perfect. When we lived in a world where we were kind of in smaller groups, it helps to define the rules so the group can get along. But
oh God, yeah, it propelled our society forward greatly.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But now we live in a time where the entire world is connected.
Yeah.
And so having a rules-based spirituality tends to make us very defensive. So
interesting.
I'm talking to somebody else and I have some experiences that, you know, maybe
contradict.
I'm not sure how they've... Right, they contradict. I'm not sure how to fit them into my structured rule-based spirituality. So then I'm left in the defensive position of I've got to either like defend myself and say, well, no, I know that these things are right.
Reshape something.
Or it has to divide things. I have to say like, okay, worst case scenario, I might just have to say like this whole set of people or experiences or topics are just bad.
Right.
Or maybe even evil. Or, you know, I mean, because I just can't. You know, I can't resolve that conflict or that contradiction.
That's
between
a good point.
The structure. So sometimes having too many rules puts us at odds with reason and our experience. And so I think that's what causes an additional level of stress. Mm-hmm. In addition to like the real stress that we're having right now, if you have a really healthy spirituality, you can adapt to stressful situations. Like I feel kind of freed when when things are starting to break around me and life is getting really interrupted, I feel a lot of freedom because I know I'm going to restructure.
That's right? Fascinating. Absolutely. Don't you feel that spirituality itself is the great reshaper? Let me see if I can try to articulate this. You know, it reshapes spirituality, often reshapes something like the end of our life and the tragedy of death into the beginning of something unimaginably beautiful. It reshapes the horror of war into a holy crusade. Take that for what it's worth.
It is
the great reshaper. It reshaped us from a wild food chain based predatory existence on this planet to one where we have now these fundamental pillars of spirituality. Contribution to others, you know, generosity, charity, tithing, becoming the best person you can be. I mean, oh my God, what incredible gifts. But don't you feel that it is the great reframer, if you will, of our realities?
Well, definitely it is. Like I said, I think you can have that in either system. So like you can, if you have a group of people adhering to the same belief system, that really, that kind of really reframes things. It makes a beautiful structure and a way to interpret the world. But you can also do it individually. So, and both are fine. You know, there's nothing, one way is not better than the other.
Sure.
But I can individually, tune into my own beliefs and kind of my own experiences, and that will restructure my world too.
Oh, big time.
It's fun because it tends to happen. It's probably happening for a lot of people right now where, people have a little extra time on their hands. And, so it's forcing people to turn within probably more than they're comfortable with or more than they're used to.
Oh, yeah.
But the nice thing is once you get over the discomfort of that is you start to notice like, oh, maybe I have some desires and dreams and passions that I wasn't paying much attention to because I was really busy making money and going to work and, doing the stuff doing the necessary things. And now I've got a little break. Suddenly you start to find these, it's very exciting. You start to find these inner desires coming up.
Well, I think it goes both ways, Jeffrey. I think it's exposing a lot. I think it's exposing our characters on a societal and an individual level, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's exposing our spirituality as well. I think you're right. I think some people are actually thriving in this time. And other people seem to be, frankly, cracking under the pressure. So I don't know if you think that is... God, I mean, I don't want to say the word weakness. What a horrible, judgmental, cynical thing to say. But is that a... is that a kind of lack of character strength? Is that a lack of spiritual resilience to where some people rise to the occasion and say, I'm going to go volunteer and see if my neighbor's okay? And other people start panic buying and thinking about themselves. I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on there because, when times are really tough like this, I mean, it does show our character and our spiritual strength. But the first thing it shows, of course, is it exposes all our vulnerability.
Yes.
So like, any weaknesses that we have or any wounds that we have are going to come out because, that's the chain is being tested. So the weak links are going to break. So our vulnerabilities are going to come out and that's hard. That's challenging. But it's really, it's our spiritual strength, or our character that determines how we handle this kind of exposure.
Yes.
And it's, when I mentioned that, if you're very flexible and have kind of an experience-based reality of or spiritual reality, then you're just sort of like, I'm very curious. I'm collecting lots of information and I'm noticing what's happening. And I have this underlying knowingness in me that I can adapt to any situation.
Wow.
And I believe the world is fundamentally good. I don't believe there's like a bunch of evil in the world. That's my belief system, So I see the world through that lens and I see opportunities to change. I see a lot of good things happening, but I don't have a lot of internal restructuring. I don't have that problem of, my strict version of how the world should work isn't working anymore. That's what happens if you have like a very, very strict belief system, very strict rigid, spirituality. It's like, and when that happens again, you're very defensive. It's like, oh, the world's breaking and it shouldn't be. So I've got to look outside and say, like, whose fault is it? What should be happening? Because this shouldn't be happening. And none of that's helpful because there's no answers. It's like, there's nobody's fault. There's no, it doesn't matter what should happen. If something else should be happening, it would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? This is, clearly this is what should have happened because it's happening.
Right? I think that's tough for people, Jeffrey. I think it's tough for people to let go. I think it's tough for people to surrender. Do you feel that surrender is a big part? I mean, it's certainly prevalent in so many different types of religions and spiritualities.
Yeah, surrender is, I guess it depends on what kind of surrender. So you can surrender your rigidity and your kind of your I can surrender my grip on things being the way that I think they should be.
That's kind of what I was referring to. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of surrender is really powerful. But also right now, I mean, people in a position of probably needing to surrender some of their lifestyle and mm-hmm. other things right now too, which, again, it can be liberating. It can be, you can basically be setting yourself up for change. You know, interruption brings change.
Mm.
And that can be a beautiful thing, but it's hard. You know, it's hard for people to let go.
That's true.
It's hard, well, it's not everybody. It's hard for some people to let go. I think the deeper you get with your own spiritual foundation and the more experience you have kind of exploring your inner world, the less scary change is.
Oh, I like that.
Because you realize that, you know, we are all so amazingly adaptable. We have so many abilities that we rarely use or that we only use unconsciously. And when you start to use those, suddenly it doesn't feel like you're really cut off. Like for me, if I had no telephone or internet or any way to contact people, I would not feel cut off from people.
Jeez.
Because I can just tune in energetically and have conversations with them. I do it all the time. It's for me, it's not much different. In fact, it's the difference is that it's more authentic and honest. Because I don't have to. Because when you talk energetically with people, you're talking to their spirit. You get the real story.
Wow,
it's not an external conversation; it's an internal one.
I like that a lot. That's a very interesting thought. You mentioned innovation. We talked off air. You were talking about taking this interruption that we all have, right, and kind of reframing it towards innovation.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty easy to do. Like I mentioned before, I switched careers. That happened for me out of an interruption that I had. I spent 2 weeks off work building a little addition on my house with my buddy. And so we're out in the sun and we're like, you know, hammering nails and sawing boards and, you know, making jokes and really having fun. And then I had to go back to work, you know, because I had a job. Right. And so I went back to work and we sat in an interior conference room for a week with all the kind of high level architects in the company, trying to solve these, the company's biggest problems for a week. And I was, the whole time I was thinking, it's beautiful outside. Like, it's so sunny and beautiful. I know, because I've been outside for 2 weeks in it. And so I kept taking breaks and just going outside, and I'd tell people, oh, I got to go to the bathroom again. Sorry, I must, today I must have a minor problem or something.
Going outside, getting the sun.
So I just go outside for 5 minutes, lay on a picnic table, and then I'd come back in. And
oh, I love that, man.
The thing that I realized was, like, just having that interruption of 2 weeks off work made me realize I'm not very interested in sitting in a windowless conference room.
Yeah.
Even though I love all the people that are in here and I respect them, we're not talking about anything that's actually meaningful. And the stuff we're doing, to be honest, doesn't matter in the big picture.
That's a powerful thought.
And I wasn't angry about it. I just got it. The light bulb went on. I'm like, this doesn't matter. I'm wasting my time here. I'm wasting my life here.
Wow.
And I wasn't angry about it. It was clear. I was like, oh, I don't want to sit behind a desk. I don't want to warm a chair up for another 15 years and just till I can get paid. I don't care if, I'm not a chair warmer. That's not my job. because that's kind of how it felt when I got that clarity. It's like, mostly I warm up the chair and delete emails. That's pretty much my primary responsibility.
I think I can do better. Yeah.
And so that helped me innovate. So what I did was, I didn't know how I was going to change, but I made a decision. I was like, I'm going to pivot my life toward, I want more of that experience I had where I was enjoying myself and I was outside and felt connected,
mm-hmm.
and less of this experience. And I just let things unfold. I let the innovation, the change take me there. And within 2 years, sure enough, I was out of that career. I'd moved to a place that was more conducive to spirituality, and I'd moved to Sedona, Arizona. So that's where a lot of crazy.
Yeah, totally. I totally know that city.
And it's beautiful because there's so much nature, you know? And so all that happened, but I didn't know that's how it was going to happen. I just changed. But I've had several big interruptions like that that turned out to be, although scary at first, really helped. I can tell you another one. When I was in business for myself doing these private sessions and healing sessions, at some point the business just stopped. And I have a whole system for working the energy to like generate business and connect with people. And it works really well for me. But at some point I realized, I'm like, oh, I have nobody on my calendar.
Right.
Like, that had never happened before. I'm like, I'm at zero, not like halfway, or, usually I was at 100% every week. And I was like, I'm at zero. So first it's the panic, like, oh my God, there's an interruption. How am I going to pay my bills? You know, like all that stuff comes in. And then I said, okay, well, let's just look around because, you know, energy doesn't disappear. It just goes somewhere else. So it's like, so what other opportunities are there? Oh, well, people have been asking me to teach and it's not here, it's over in Texas, but yeah, I've got time now. Why don't I start exploring that thing? And that turned into a whole traveling and teaching career that turned into, you know, making programs that I have now. And so wow. You know, I took what could have been scary. Like I could have just sat there and continued to try to do what wasn't working, but I'm pretty adaptable. I just go, well, it's not working. Oh, well.
Jeez, you know, man, it's a powerful way to go through life. And I actually really identify with you. Those who know me know the many wild career shifts I've had. And I kind of, you can tell me if you agree with this, I kind of just credit it to staying open to the universe and going with the flow and letting serendipity kind of happen.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that? And do you have any other tips on how, you know, someone might be in a similar situation, but having a hard time reframing that? What was the key in your opinion?
Sure. Well, if I think about, I kind of tune into right now, like what are people hitting right now?
Uh-huh.
People are probably hitting the situation of, you know, obviously the way things were working changed and it's very disruptive. And so I would say, you know, the key is to think that, change is opportunity. Even painful change is opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to look around and say, well, of the things that are kind of breaking, are there some of those parts that I wanted to break anyway? Right?
Like, yes.
Maybe like being at home a lot and not having to go to work as much, like probably most people were kind of secretly hoping for that anyway.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Just not in this way. Like they wanted to continue having income.
They wanted
so
the
on.
Choice. No. That's what's they strange.
They didn't want to be afraid that they'd have no money.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true too. And that's fair. But it's interesting how, again, it's the reframing, right? It's complaining every day how I wish I just had some time. I wish I just had some time to sit at home with the family. Yeah. And then you get your wish, but it's some weird Twilight Zone wish where now you can't leave the house and suddenly it's a nightmare.
Right.
But again, what's the difference? It's kind of a mental shift, I feel.
It is. And it's really putting us in a very uncomfortable position where we're having to, we can't really hide from ourselves. And we can't hide from the people that we're close to.
Yes. So
like,
true.
I love my wife to death. I mean, not literally, but you know, I love her like crazy, I should say. And I'm used to spending a lot of time at home, but when we're both here all the time, it's like, wow, and that's that's really exposes us to like more challenge. Because with my wife, it's a little unique because we've been married 10 years, but she's not fluent in English and I'm not fluent in Japanese.
That's insane.
Even after 10 years.
That's so crazy.
So when we met, we could just say, I could say konnichiwa, Jeffrey Anandes, and she could say, hi, I'm Hisami, nice to meet you. And that was it. And that was another one of my big life interruptions, right? Is my heart was, I was very clear, like, oh, I met the woman in my dreams. I met this woman I've been wanting to, if I had a checklist of all the things I wanted, she's all those things and more. But I kind of forgot to put on the checklist, speak the same language, right? Lives in a country nearby. You know?
Oh my gosh, that's wild. So you're living in Japan with her right now and so you're stuck at home with your wife who you speak with through broken languages.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and well, we speak kind of a jinglish, you know, kind of a mash of both of them together. But it's great. So again, it's because I'm very flexible, I could step into a situation like that. It's the best decision I ever made, honestly. But certainly if I was using my logic, I never could have done that. That it's like,
jeez, man.
It was hard to reconcile like the way I believe the world should work. Like I knew I was going to find a relationship. I could just feel it in my heart. Many single people feel that. Like I know I'm going to find that relationship, but they haven't found it yet. So when I found it, I had the choice of saying, okay, I found it, but it's not what I expected. It's way better than what I expected, but it also has some challenges that are serious, you know, like language.
That's so wild, man.
But
I love it though.
Am I up to it? And I always just say, I'm up to it. This is what I asked for. I'm going for it. And because I have that fundamental spiritual belief that everything always works out.
Mm.
You know, it's something I got from my mom since she used to tell me when I was a kid, like everything always works out.
It's a powerful belief. Yeah.
Yeah. When you have that, it's easier to take wild risks. And I tell you, if you're willing to take wild risks, life is very, very fun. Like my life story is not boring, right? They're like,
You're speaking my language, man. I 100% agree with you. And here's the thing, Jeffrey. Here at Lifebook, we're really about letting individuals craft their own life vision. And one of the things I've come to grips with is not everybody's like that. I think that there's a certain type of person who won't feel fully fulfilled unless they take these big life risks. And I'm one of these people. And it sounds like you're one of these people. And I think a lot of life bookers are that type of person, but not all of them. Some of them aren't. Some of them have, I've really come to respect the beautifully simple life visions of life bookers out there. I love seeing in the Facebook groups, the posts of life bookers who just have such simple, beautiful life. I almost envy them because of my overly complex, exciting life, where it's like, there's a beautiful simplicity, but I think there are some core commonalities. I think it's still about, like you've been saying this entire interview, remaining flexible, remaining adaptable, remaining open to the universe. I would say, Jeffrey, and I'm picking this up off of you, I'm not sure you've used this word yet, you got to remain authentic. I feel a great authenticity there. And I feel that spirituality is the one category that really, really demands that authenticity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, authenticity is important. And it's also challenging. It's difficult because especially I think in our spiritual selves, we're not, most people, and thinking of me historically, I haven't always been connected to who I really am.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. My identity was so wrapped up in
other people's stuff.
Yeah. My job and my status and who liked me and all the external things,
totally.
Right? And those are all great. There's nothing, I love the external world too. However, the internal world is where kind of the rubber meets the road. Like if I don't take care of myself inside, it doesn't matter how much money I have or how successful I am or if I can check all the boxes. Like my world is not going to be satisfying and happy if I'm not connected with myself, with my, my own true desires and what's inside me. And that's hard because a lot of times for me anyway, the desires that I have inside oftentimes lead me to wreak havoc in my outer world. You know, I've had successful businesses that other people envied and thought that they were great. And I've just blown them up because I'm like, but I want to do something else.
Right.
That business is making money and it's helping people and it's wonderful, but I'm drawn to do something else. I have this desire and this passion, this love to do the next thing. And I need to make room, not just time-wise, but I just need to make room in my consciousness to focus on this.
Yes.
And it's and people always think I'm nuts, but the next thing brings me so much joy and enthusiasm and excitement and I end up helping even more people. And it's like, for me, that's a great way to live. But like you said, I do admire people that are on a more, maybe a less radical journey than myself.
Nice. That's a good way to put it. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think
That's great too.
Yeah. I think as long as it just holds those core themes, right? I think 80% of the battle of life, if you want to look at it like that, 80% of the journey of life, let's say, 80% of the SAT test of life is relationships, with those who you're closest with, your relationship with yourself, your relationship with the universe. I would throw in maybe your health and strength may be in there as well. That's maybe a close second. All the other stuff, job status, bank account, titles, jawline, all that other stuff, I would say is about 20%. And if you focus on that 20% at the end of your life, you're going to feel 80% empty, man. I don't like to make generalizations, but that's one that I can say is virtually true. I'm sure there are exceptions, but those who focus on that 20% of the aesthetics and the materials and the titles, if they focus their whole life on that, they lay on their deathbed with regrets, it seems to me.
Yeah.
Don't let me put words in your mouth, but would you agree with that?
For most people, if they solely focus on that. However, it also depends kind of on our personality as spirits. So for some of us come in more connected than others naturally. I'm not saying I'm in that category actually, but like if I think about my wife, for example, or my dad is more, I would say more connected than me. So there's people that, because they're already connected internally and that world is sort of happy and healthy.
I would agree with
that. They don't need to focus a whole lot on it. So,
yes.
So you can find people in any profession that are just, like I can think of a guy I used to work with and I he always struck me as odd. This was my software life. And because he just came to work, he did his job. To me, I thought he lacks this whole thing that I consider healthy ambition. But what he has that I don't have is he has a calmness and a very peaceful and happy life.
Yes.
And it's like, interesting. So he's not focused on spirituality. He's not like taking workshops and doing self-help, but I suspect it's because he doesn't need it.
That is a very good point. I think some people are born for their role. Like I'm sure Patton was born for war and, you know, he was there at the right time, man. But I do think that on an individual scale, when it comes to the pursuit of happiness, right, it's about the connectivity level and the consciousness level. And again, I don't think it's a demeaning thing to say like, oh, you know, he wasn't connected. He wasn't elevated. Seems to me like he was happy and fulfilled. So it's who's the joke on? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You can be connected and do anything. Like if you watch people that are really good at sports, if you watch like the quarterback in the moment when he's throwing the ball, that's meditation.
Oh yeah.
You know, what they call the zone, you know, because in that moment, there's no distraction. There's nothing else. You're not thinking. You might be perceiving things and adapting and acting, like all that's happening, but you don't have time for thought and rationality.
Oh, don't get me started. You're so right, Jeffrey. The sports we experience are so spiritual. We're all tied up in that moment, a stadium full of people, millions of people around the nation watching this moment, everyone with their hopes and their various religious garb, aka their jerseys and face paint. Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you, man. I think a lot of the stuff we do actually strives towards that religious need and sometimes fulfills it to a degree, I would say.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I think about when you talk about people watching sports, that didn't even occur to me because I don't, for me, sports is always something I do. Like I'm a rock climber, you know, for many, many years I climbed.
Oh, that's cool.
I was a snowboarder. I ran a snowboarding club. And, you know, so I've always been involved in some kind of sports, but I really don't watch sports much. For me, it's like, it's the experience of using our bodies that's spiritual.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, well, think about it. The experience of using your body. I mean, that's all that spirituality is, right? Your spirit is using this body. So
that's a profound thought. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, this has been a wonderful conversation, Jeffrey. I want to make sure that I get a couple more of these questions in.
Yeah.
We're here, we're stuck inside. I don't know if things are ever going to go back to normal when they let us out. I think that things are going to be different some areas, you know. You see all sorts of structures coming down, new ones being built. How should we focus as individuals on acting, behaving post-crisis, in your opinion?
Mm-hmm. Post-crisis, I would say well, a couple things. So one, the crisis part is optional, right? So I would say that we're in a time of great change, and crisis comes when your life is structured in a way that's not adaptable. That's why we're in crisis. But this period of change is just getting started. So I hate to break that to people, but the reason why this change is happening is that, you know, the way we've structured our things, like environmentally and financially and personally and so on, worked great for a long time, but we're not in that time anymore.
Oh,
and
wow.
So because our structures aren't working anymore, they're changing. And that's just natural. That's just what happens. So it's not a scary thing. Now, the crisis part, that's happening because we're not very adaptable and we're clinging to the old things. But it's going to, more and more change is going to happen. So this is a great time. You know, if this little crisis, you know, assume that it resolves in some way positive, then might want to start thinking about how to be more flexible. So like for me, some of the big things are like, we have this idea of time-based income. I'm going to put in some time and I'm going to get money for that. Okay. So this is one of those structures that isn't going to last.
Wow.
And so what I switched to years ago is a help-based income. I never think, how can I make money? But I think is, how can I help others?
Yes.
Because if I help other people, money will come to me. I will make money. And so then what people can think about is just like, what is your unique way of helping others? Not the way that everybody else is doing it and the way that worked for your teachers and so on. Like, what's your unique way of helping others? And you have to kind of listen. You don't have to think about this, right? you just have to kind of listen and go within and and then start to notice that, oh, actually this kind of matches some of those inner desires that were coming up for me during this interruption phase when I was at home by myself. And so it's like, oh, I have noticed some unique things about me, and I noticed how I was able to help others in this way. I'm going to lean into that, or I'm going to pivot in that direction.
I like that.
Because this is really important. In another, it's going to be a while, you know, it might be a couple of decades, but at some point, you know, this hours for money trade is going to end.
It's fascinating thought, man.
So you might as well get used to, you know, the real economy, which is you help somebody and then you make money. So a help-based income, help-based economy. And so that's really important. And it feels good. You know, even if it didn't come true and most people are still spending hours for money, I'm still glad that I'm helping people. And that's how my income comes. So it works either way. And then I'd say the other thing people could do is maybe give up on this idea that life's going to be comfortable and safe.
Yes.
And shoot for enjoyable or fantastic instead. You know, so it's like comfortable and safe seems good. And it is really comfortable and safe and nice, but it never lasts forever. But joy, like if I can laugh at myself, if I can laugh at my situation, if I can find amusement even when I'm in pain, like then life is pretty fun. And I'm gonna be enjoying life. I'm gonna be enjoying even the crises and so on. And so that's a big shift. It's a lot of it's just about, you know, changing your external focus to internal. So even in my, if I look at financially, at some point I was thinking, oh, do I need to move? You know, I've got an extra, you know, a couple thousand dollars. Where should I invest it? And then I thought, why am I looking outside? Like it's a company to invest in. Why should I invest that in me? So why don't I make a business that's about how the unique way that I want to help people, and then put that money into that business and bet. I'm going to bet on myself.
Yes.
And right now that's a better bet than betting on the world outside, because the world outside is changing and you have no control or not much influence over that. But if you bet on yourself, you have a lot of influence on where that goes.
Wonderful advice.
So it's great. It's a great way to, you know, and then maybe let some things go to make room for this post-interruption life, you know, kind of, you know, like for me, when I switched careers, I had to let that house go, even though I just built a beautiful addition on it, because financially it was a burden for my new lifestyle. And as hard as it was to do, the funny thing for me, because I'm listening more than I'm thinking, is I sold that house when the market hit the peak in Denver, and then the whole housing market collapsed.
Wow.
So if I'd have stayed in my job, doing
would
what
have
I
lost
was
all
supposed
that equity.
To do,
yeah.
I'd have lost it anyway.
Jeez.
So what seems like you're giving up a lot of times is an illusion. Like
you
it
could
may
never
not,
know. Yeah. You yeah, could never.
That house yeah. felt safe and comfortable and like it would make money, but it turns out that the reality was it wouldn't have anyway. So I let it go with regret. And then later it's like, oh, I'm glad. So, you know, think about it. Might be some things you need to let go.
Yes. I think the letting go of pursuing safety and comfort, not that pursuing those things is a bad idea. I think you should definitely insulate yourself to the best of your abilities, but realize what you're saying is you never have full control. And I think it's a better thing to kind of lean into that, become comfortable with that, invite that into your life, and then focus on things like you said, excitement, fun, being effective, contribution, helping others. I mean, what is safety and comfort if you don't have those other things?
I mean, the safe, comfortable times are great. I love them. I love those times. But all times aren't like that. We always we kind of cycle in and out. And so if you're adaptable, you can have fun in all times.
Yeah, man. I absolutely love that adaptability. I don't think I've heard people bring up adaptability during spiritual month. So I got to hand it to you there, Jeffrey. Before we sign off, though, give us some practical strategies, some spiritual principles. I mean, you already have, but maybe just some parting wisdom for life bookers who are looking to deepen their spirituality this year and really improve this category of their life book.
Yeah. So I'd say that this is a good time for spiritual preparedness. So you've got a little time. So to do that, I'd say a few things. One is really focus on the present moment, meaning your present moment, not everybody's present moment, and enjoy some happy moments today. So if that means turning off the news feed and playing with your dog, you know, that's great. That's success. You know, focus on making some happy moments right now. as my wife likes to say it, she says, you know, our real job in life is to make happy memories.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So if you think about that, that'll help. And then focusing inward, listening to your own, you know, what's happening inside instead of thinking. You got to break that habit of thinking. And again, let go of your rigidity a little bit. You know, trust yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't need a bunch of rules. Trust yourself. Trust the good in other people. We can really create a beautiful new world experience if we choose to. Doesn't have to be a scary time.
Lovely, Jeffrey. Powerful, powerful words. I want to thank you for taking this time. I'm sure a bunch of life bookers are wondering, where can I get more Jeffrey Allen? Where can my listeners learn more about your work and everything you do?
Sure. Yeah. So you can go to my website. It's www.jeffreyallen.love. So pretty easy to remember.
Nice.
And of course, you can also find me on Mindvalley. So I've got two programs with Mindvalley. One's about energy work, duality. It's all about energy work and energy body. And it's more I teach a lot in that one. So it's really fun if you want to learn about energy work. But the second program I have is probably more fits the world right now and probably is a little better for life bookers, I think. So if you're looking for another big program, you know, I know you're already in one. This Unlocking Transcendence program with Mindvalley is all about the things I just talked about. It's just, let's explore your inner world. Let's look at, what does it mean to be a spirit? And you're gonna learn through experiences. I don't actually teach anything in there. What I do is guide people through having their own experiences. And we go deep into 12 different categories that I consider spiritual. And
love it.
And so what that does is that helps you build this flexibility. Like all of a sudden you're like, wow, I just did a whole bunch of things that I thought were impossible or had never even considered attempting, but I did them myself personally and I had experiences. So all of a sudden when there's, you know, when the next crisis comes around, you have a whole bunch more of you mm-hmm. that you can trust. There's a whole bunch more of you that you can lean into and that you can leverage to be happy in your world. So it's just a way of getting to know yourself.
Perfect timing for this. Life bookers, get after it. They are familiar with the Mindvalley platform, so I'm sure you will be seeing some love. Speaking of love, jeffreyallen.love. Check it out, all you life bookers. One more time, Jeffrey, thank you so much, man. This was a very enjoyable spiritual interview. Truly unlike any spiritual interview that I've done doing this show for three, almost 4 years now.
Great, great. Glad to hear it. It was really fun. Thanks, Jordan.
Everybody listening, thank you so much for participating in the Lifebook membership program. And thank you for listening to the podcast. I hope you're having a wonderful time crafting your life vision out there. Please don't hesitate to reach out to me if you need anything. I hope you have an extraordinary day, folks. I'll let you go now. See you next time on the Lifebook podcast, everyone. Bye-bye.